Welcome to Upsize Your Leadership, the podcast about enhancing your effectiveness wherever you lead, whatever your role. It's that time again, another new year. For most of us, not just a new year, new goals as well, or at least updated ones, rejuvenated projects, fresh resolve, renewed determination, new initiatives, big ideas getting underway. As leaders, our bold ambitions for the new year rely on our ability to draw on the talents, capabilities, and energy of others, especially our workers. To succeed, we depend on their engagement, and not just nominal engagement, full, unequivocal engagement. Let's talk about that for a while today, shall we? Hello, my name is Mike Armour, President of Strategic Leadership Development International, which I founded in Dallas some 25 years ago. During that time, I've coached over 800 executives and entrepreneurs across more than 80 industries. I've listened to their frustrations for decades, and none is more common than their dismay over non-engaged workers. I've been thinking about that a great deal of late. My aspirations for the new year call for the launch of two new enterprises. Both of them will require me to delegate critical duties extensively, and those duties will need to be fulfilled on exacting timetables. One of my most pressing concerns, then, is whether I will be able to build a team that has a sufficient level of engagement for my plans to prosper. I've therefore been reminding myself of engagement principles that I've included in leadership training for years. Today, as something of a refresher course for myself, I want to share some of those principles with you. So stand by. I'll be back in a moment.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
For years now, I've avoided the term buy-in when describing what I want from colleagues and workers on whom I depend for critical contributions. At an earlier point in my career, I used that term all the time. Then one day I realized that buy-in is cheap. It demands nothing by way of personal investment, whether it's an investment of time, energy, talent, or finances. We regularly buy into ideas or initiatives that never gain our active involvement. For example, most of us buy into the idea of eradicating world hunger, but few of us are actively involved in combating it. Buy-in requires little more than mental assent. With the plans that I have on the table for 2025, I don't need buy-in. I need engagement, genuine engagement. I say genuine engagement because in English, the word engagement, standing alone, is somewhat ambiguous. It implies commitment, but not the specific level of commitment. Having a dinner engagement may require nothing more than a commitment to show up. By contrast, engaging in battle calls for a commitment to put life itself on the line. Engagement thus exists on a continuum, something of a graduated scale which runs from nominal commitment on one end to total unwavering commitment on the other. Wise leaders do their utmost to build a team of workers as near the upper end of this spectrum as possible. Moreover, they don't confuse compliant workers with engaged ones. Workers can be compliant by merely meeting the minimums expected of them. They show up reliably, usually on time, satisfy the basic requirements of their job, and create no disruptions. Companies generally describe them as good, dependable employees. Dependability, however, does not necessarily indicate engagement. Perceptive leaders measure worker engagement, or in the nonprofit world, volunteer engagement, by the degree to which people are emotionally invested in what the leader wants to achieve. And a key phrase in this metric is emotionally invested. To be compliant, workers need little or no emotional investment. They may not even need to be mentally engaged. They simply have to be adept at endlessly repeating familiar procedures. On the other hand, being fully engaged demands emotional investment. Compliant commitment is possible without emotional investment. Genuine engagement always requires it. Emotion in this instance does not mean emotionalism. Rather, it's emotion in the form of being eager to participate, working with enthusiasm, feeling concern for fellow workers, taking pride in the overall enterprise, and finding pleasure in group victories along the way. In essence, engagement is such emotional investment in an endeavor that a person is eager to give unwavering imagination, energy, and effort to its success. And why my recurring use of the term investment? Because ambitious plans demand more than merely buying into what leadership seeks to accomplish. Going back to my earlier statement about world hunger, we regularly buy into ideas or initiatives that never gain our active involvement. Rather than buy-in, engagement calls for investment. If nothing else, an investment of our time, energy, imagination, creativity, and effort. As a rule of thumb, the more we invest in something, the more closely we pay attention to it. We have a vested interest in it. As Jesus said, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Assuming that the corporate culture is constructive, what is required of leaders to stimulate high engagement from their people? Notice that I did not ask what it takes for workers to be engaged. I asked what leaders must do to stimulate worker engagement. Every individual, I believe, has the potential to be fully engaged and in multiple spheres of life simultaneously. At one and the same time, I can be fully engaged in my family, my church, and my job. Thus, workplace engagement resides as potential in the heart of every individual. The role of the leader is to draw that potential to the surface and energize it. To understand the nature of this process, note some ways in which we use the word engagement or engaging in routine statements. We speak of a lock that is engaged, a couple who are engaged, an engaging conversation, an engaging idea. Now, let's survey these four and notice what stands out in them. The dominant characteristic of an engaged lock is that it is connected. With a couple who are engaged, the dominant characteristic is mutual commitment, marked by genuine care for each other. The dominant quality of an engaging conversation is that the parties are in deep rapport, exchanging thoughts and stories in ways that draw them closer. And the dominant attribute of engaging ideas is that they open our minds to captivating possibilities. Drawing on these examples, we can then map the agenda for leaders who seek engagement from their people. Leaders must first connect with their people at a personal level. Second, they must use this connection to demonstrate caring commitment to their people. Third, as a part of this demonstration, they should communicate with their people in ways that are collegial, collaborative, and mutually respectful. And fourth, they should routinely convey their aspirations in ways that captivate everyone's imagination. In nurturing engagement, two realities are uppermost. First, example counts. We cannot expect more engagement from our workers than they see in their leaders. As in so many other aspects of leadership, the process of gaining engagement requires leaders to model the way. Second, in today's world, we should not expect worker engagement unless managers are involved in the life of the workers. Here, too, is a distinction between commitment and engagement. I have seen situations in which workers sensed that management had little interest in them as individuals, yet the workers were still committed to their work. They maintained this commitment because they believed in the enterprise itself, without regard to whether they were committed to their managers. But while workers or volunteers may remain committed when leadership seems distant or disinterested in them as a person, rarely will they become genuinely engaged. The importance of a leader's connection with workers cannot be overstated. Worker turnover has been the subject of countless studies, and these studies consistently find that people leave a company primarily because of a poor relationship with a direct manager or the person to whom that manager reports. Another study surveyed employees in over 100 industries, asking them to list things that led them to trust a manager. The second most frequent answer was, "A manager who genuinely cares for me." One of the highest tributes that can be paid a leader is for people to say, "We don't always agree with his decisions, but we never doubt that he truly cares for us." When I think of this kind of leader, my mind goes immediately to an exceptional man whom I had the privilege of knowing 40 years ago. Long since passed from the scene, he was a giant among American industrialists. On occasion, I would walk through his massive factory with him. It was a striking experience. When he passed by, workers to a person looked up and greeted him warmly with broad smiles. Invariably, he reciprocated by greeting workers by name and often pausing to inquire about their spouse or parents or children, again by referring to these family members by name. This would be impressive in any factory, but it was all the more impressive in a factory with dozens of workers on each shift. His was a highly cyclical business, and inevitably years came along when he had too little work to keep everyone busy. When this happened, he did not fire his excess workforce. He put the entire plant on rotating work furloughs at a reduced salary, promising to make up the lost salary when business came back, and for decades he kept his promise. So workers stuck around, even with reduced wages. In addition, he built a state-of-the-art medical clinic on site. The family of every worker, furloughed or not, was free to use the clinic for routine health needs and encouraged to do so. In short, he never needed to tell employees that he cared for them. His concern was apparent. Unsurprisingly, then, his was a pace-setting company. He had engineered pioneering breakthroughs which won him prestigious awards and lucrative contracts worldwide. In his industry, his name was synonymous with quality and innovation. Yet, when you asked him how he built such a reputation, he always answered in terms of the engagement of his workers. Amazingly, he gained their engagement while insisting on exacting standards. His factory manufactured equipment, which would be subjected to some of the harshest, most life-threatening conditions on the globe. Quality was essential. He once told me, "I only hire metalsmiths who drill holes to the nearest 1/10000th of an inch." And he settled for nothing less. He was fond of saying, "If I ask you whether the hole you drilled met exact specifications and you tell me that it's close enough, I will say, 'Please notice where the carpenter built the door. Pick up your final paycheck as you pass through it.'" He could be this demanding in his expectations because his people knew that he cared for them and believed in them. They reciprocated with an engagement that made him legendary around the globe. Let me wrap up then by repeating something that I said earlier. If we want full engagement from our people, we must be fully engaged with them. Never ask for their buy-in. Never settle for mere compliance. Consistently ask for full engagement, then gain it through personal engagement with them. A PDF copy of today's program is available at upsizeyourleadership.com/episodes. Simply click on the program title and select the link to download transcripts. And why not subscribe yourself? This podcast has been in abeyance for several weeks while I worked on launching an online startup, but with the new year, I'm back on a regular production schedule, and some thrilling new podcast plans are in place for the months ahead. Subscribe and you won't miss a single episode. And speaking of missing an episode, for anyone who owns a small business, I hope you were able to listen to last week's podcast. It took listeners behind the scenes of court and congressional action over the past 30 days, impacting the 37 million small businesses required to file the Beneficial Ownership Information Report. As of a week ago, that requirement has been suspended due to a temporary restraining order. But another appeals court hearing in the next few days could reinstate the report. It's very difficult to keep up with all the twists and turns that this court case is taking. But I will provide timely updates for my listeners whenever there are new developments. Last week's podcast will give you as thorough an update on this situation as any that you will find on the internet. Thanks for joining me today. And thanks to all of you who have recommended this podcast to others. Its listenership continues to grow. I look forward to visiting with you again soon. Until then, find some way every day to upsize your leadership.